Hello and welcome to the Africa Today podcast from the BBC at 15:30 GMT on Friday, the 4th of March. I am Hassan Aruni. In the pod today, with a warning out that Ivory Coast is on the verge of a new civil war, we ask if it has already started. And we look at what life is like in the northern town of Bouaké.
They are helpless and also hopeless. So those politicians, they should all go to hell. That's what they deserve. I'm sorry to speak like this, but this is the reality we are living in.
Security forces in the Libyan capital fire tear gas at protesters who took to the streets following today's prayers, and a worsening humanitarian situation in the Kenyan border town of Mandera after days of heavy fighting between rival groups in Somalia. The African Union team, given the job of sorting out the leadership conundrum in Ivory Coast, is meeting in Mauritania today. The group consists of five heads of state from West Africa and elsewhere in Africa. Their meeting comes as fears grow that the country could once again slide into civil war. 2 days ago, security forces shot dead six women who were marching in support of Alassane Ouattara in the main city, Abidjan. Witnesses say men in uniform shot the protesters in the Abobo neighborhood, a pro-Ouattara area which has seen frequent clashes. This is how a resident of Abobo described the situation there after yesterday's shooting.
Since the elections, the situation here has been bad. Those loyal to Laurent Gbagbo have been going from house to house. They say they are carrying out patrols, but they are scaring people. If you remember well, yesterday some women wanted to go out and march for peace and in favor of the Orange Revolution. But instead, they were shot at and six women were killed. The situation is quite bad. There are checkpoints everywhere to check if there are insurgents in the area. All you hear is gunshots every day. Everyone is scared. We are all indoors because we are too scared to go out. All we do is peep through our windows to see what is going on. We can't even go out to get our basic necessities. There is no food to eat. Everything is crumbling.
A resident there of the Abobo neighborhood of Abidjan. Well, given the escalating violence in Ivory Coast, we also contacted Wamuru Kone, a university lecturer at the University of Bouaké in the north, to find out about the situation there.
It's incredible what we are living. Since Monday, no light, no electricity, no money. That's the first time I've been living such a situation. I don't know. It's desperation. Yeah. There is no life in Bouaké now. There is no life. Our life we are living is the life which comes from the sun. If not from 6 p.m., there's no more activity. No more activities. Life here is dull. Think of the people who are at the hospital. People who have to be operated on. I don't know. This is incredible. You cannot think that a human being may take such decisions. Personally, I don't understand. How do you want us to live here? How? It's terrible. It's incredible. That's why I say politicians are not human beings. They are not human beings. It's terrible. Now, if you see the market now, it's almost empty. Almost empty. No money, no light, no water. Even the wells where we used to take some water, now the wells are getting dry because we are in the dry season. Now it's not good water we are having now. The water is soiled and people have to drink it because there is nothing else to do. That's why I was saying they are helpless and also hopeless. It's a pity and incredible. So those politicians, I don't know, they should all go to hell. That's what they deserve. Voilà. I'm sorry to speak like this, but this is the reality we are living. This is our reality. Our reality. This is sad reality.
Wanmuru Kone, a university lecturer at the University of Bouaké. All of this has got the International Crisis Group very worried. The campaigning organization issued a report today warning that Ivory Coast is on the verge of a new civil war between the army, loyal to the defiant Laurent Gbagbo, and the Force Nouvelle, the ex-insurgency, who are now supporting the widely acclaimed winner of the presidential election, Alassane Ouattara. The ICG says that the result is a serious threat to peace, security and stability in all of West Africa. Rinaldo Dupin is the ICG analyst on Ivory Coast. On the line to Dakar, I asked him whether the country is on the verge of a civil war or has the war already started.
Well, I will answer to this with another question. When should we use the word war? You know, you already have 200,000 people displaced only in a district of Abidjan named Abobo. You also have 40,000 refugees, Ivorian refugees in Liberia, and a death toll of more than 350 people killed since December. So is it already war or not? It's very difficult to say. But what we are seeing now in Abidjan especially, it's war, yes, with war scenes and a kind of war zone. And Abobo is a war zone, yes.
So you are worried that the African Union's attempt to end the standoff in Abidjan is actually leading to confusion about the whole situation there. Is that what you're suggesting in your report?
Yeah, we are worried about the division inside the African Union.
What division?
Well, especially between some ECOWAS members like Nigeria, Burkina Faso and Senegal, and another camp which is a little bit more really in favor of Laurent Gbagbo, composed with two countries, Angola and South Africa. You already have a kind of division between the AU position, which is quite mild, and the ECOWAS position that has a very, very strong position since the beginning of this crisis.
Are you suggesting that the two organizations don't see eye to eye on how to end the problems in Ivory Coast?
Yes, I do.
But why would there be such a division when the African Union actually is the parental body and it's the one that's actually supposed to be calling the shots?
Well, because you've got one or two major players inside African Union who are not really in favor of Ouattara and much more in favor of Gbagbo.
Who are you talking about here?
Well, basically, Angola. Angola is an old supporter of Gbagbo. And Jacob Zuma in South Africa, and Zuma took very clear position saying, well, that for him, you know, this election is not very clear. For us, ICG, I mean, there is a clear winner, which is Ouattara. And for ECOWAS also, there is a clear winner, which is Ouattara. But apparently, South Africa doesn't share this position.
But would the South Africans be taking that position out of a point of ignorance, or could it be that they've taken this position because they've been involved in trying to find peace in Ivory Coast for quite a while now, and they know what's actually happening there?
I'm not sure they are fully informed of the reality of the situation, first.
On what do you base that?
On the fact that, for example, there is a clear victory of Ouattara with more than 300,000 votes ahead, you know. And, South Africa apparently doesn't mention this. And this is very clear. And there is a very clear manipulation of the Constitutional Court by Gbagbo after the 28th of November. And this element, apparently South Africa seems to ignore it.
That was Rinaldo Dupin, the ICG analyst on Ivory Coast. Unrest in Libya continued today as police in Tripoli fired tear gas at hundreds of protesters after Friday prayers. There have also been clashes between rebel fighters and troops loyal to Colonel Gaddafi in both the east and the west of the country. Meanwhile, thousands of people are still trying to flee Libya overland. Earlier, I spoke to the BBC's Jim Muir, who's on the Tunisia-Libya border.
Well, there have been various developments that have caused a big change to the scene here. One is that the flow of people coming across from Libya into Tunisia has practically died away. It's down to a mere trickle. Already on Thursday, it was down to below 2,000, something like 1,800, having been at levels almost twice that in the early part of the week. The other thing that's happened is that large numbers of Bangladeshis who had been stranded at the border, thousands and thousands of them, have made their way on foot to a reception camp that's quite a few kilometres away up the road. So that formed a really spectacular sight, carrying their possessions for quite a long distance in the sun because they wanted to get to the next stage of their journey home.
So the Bangladeshis sound like they are pretty well sorted out.
Well, in fact, they're the least sorted in a way as in terms of the big group, because they're behind, for example, the Egyptian workers who've been largely now cleared and are being flown home in relays from Jerba Airport. The Bangladeshis are a step behind. They've had to walk all the way to the transit camp, and there it'll probably take several days to get them all out. There are around 50 or 60 flights a day now going out of Jerba Airport to various locations, with the initial focus on Cairo. But I think the Bangladeshis will be the main focus for several days as this huge backlog is tackled.
Now, to come back to the flow of people trying to leave Libya and come into Tunisia that has been reduced dramatically, is there an explanation for this, given that the security situation has deteriorated in the country with all the clashes in recent days?
Well, the UNHCR has expressed a great concern at the fact that armed groups loyal to Colonel Gaddafi have taken over the border region, and they are worried, obviously, that security forces are perhaps even preventing people from coming across. There were apparently satellite images available to the UN showing that there were some groups that are being held up further inland, maybe 30, 40 kilometres further in. Certainly there has been a radical change in the last few days on how the border works, with the impression very strong that the Libyan authorities had tightened up. They, I think, were distressed by the images we were showing earlier this week of huge numbers, especially of Egyptian migrant workers, just massed on the Libyan side, pressed against the barriers, trying to get through into Tunisia. I think orders must have gone out to change that image, because that area was cleared very, very quickly. And since then, the flow has been really much more controlled.
What are the people who are still coming across saying?
They are saying that the situation on the other side is very chaotic, that there are very many checkpoints between, for example, Tripoli and the border, where they are relieved of a lot of their things, especially mobile phone SIM cards, cameras, anything that might be carrying evidence out of Libya. There's a very, very mixed bunch coming across now. There are quite a number of sub-Saharan Africans from Ghana, Eritrea, Somalia, and so on. So there's altogether something like 33 nationalities, in addition to Egyptians and Bangladeshis.
The BBC's Jim Muir, who's on the Tunisia-Libya border. When the Ethiopian army and forces of the Somali Transitional Federal Government exchanged gunfire in Somalia a few days ago, several Kenyans living on the common Kenya, Ethiopia and Somalia border were displaced. Many have been living with relatives, but the few Kenyans who couldn't find well wishers to stay with have moved to Moi Stadium to live with the more than 11,000 Somali refugees who've been entering Kenya in their hundreds to seek refuge there. Our reporter, Muliro Telewa, is in Mandera. He sent this report.
We are at Buruburu Estate in Mandera town, where only last week some members of the Ethiopian forces and some from Al-Shabaab, from the Islamic Somali fighters, were exchanging fire. And in Buruburu, we have witnessed one of the houses that was shot down by some of the big guns that were owned by both the Al-Shabaab.
I am Suleiman Zakabey, a teacher based at Mandera Boys Town Primary School. It was on Friday that we were just camping at our home that militias entered our home, started exchanging fires, and then here we started now running away with our children. When then these people had equipments that are sophisticated equipments, they were trying to exchange fires in front of my house. Others were even taking water from my tank. And then when I saw the situation was intense, the situation was very difficult. I could not bear. I took my children. I started running away with it. And then in the meantime, I was told your house was on fire. And then when I came back running, I found that everything was destroyed. All items inside my house got burnt. There's nothing I have recovered from my items. And up to now, I have not come back to my home. And I'm camping at Moi Stadium with my children.
We moved to Moi Stadium in the south of Mandera town, where more than 11,000 Somali refugees and several displaced Kenyans have settled with their families. Although the Kenya Red Cross has started registering the refugees and the internally displaced at the stadium, most of the people have to use their own money to fend for themselves as the final arrangements to provide food and accommodation are being prepared.
You are now living around this camp with the Somali refugees and you are Kenyan. What is the feeling really?
The feeling is very bad. Partly now we, the Kenyans and we from Somalis, are together. We have the same problem as a common problem. We don't have shelter, we don't have medicine. We request other international agents to come and help us for the moment.
Although gunfire has not been heard in Mandera in the past 2 days, but the effect of the war between the African Union-backed Somali transitional government and their sympathizers Ethiopia on one side and Al-Shabaab on the other is causing Kenyans living on the border unnecessary agony. The schools are closed. Small-scale business people who are known to operate within the three countries, which are a walking distance, are now suffering.
That was Muliro Telewa in Mandera, Kenya. And that's it for today. Thank you for downloading the Africa Today podcast from the BBC, recorded weekdays at 15:30 GMT. You can also listen to our programs on our website, bbcworldservice.com/Africa. I am Hassan Aruni. Until next time, goodbye.